This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey. Hey guys, today's episode is called Design It Yourself. And today we're going to be talking about how the influx of creative tools is affecting the creative industries in general.
So why did you want to talk about this subject, Maria?
Well, actually, I was kind of thinking the other day about all these new tools that have come up, especially when you look at stuff like, you know, UI, UX, and there's a lot of graphics tools that are blowing up. And it kind of occurred to me that, like, we're kind of in this, like, renaissance for software really taking over and people really relying on software to create. And I think there's a lot of interesting effects that have occurred due to this influx from the client side and also from the creative side.
Do you think this is something that's really affecting, like, creative industries in general? Because you seem like you're just talking about UI, UX, which is cool, because, I mean, it's a really popular industry right now. But how is it affecting, you know, creative industries in general?
Yeah, creative industries, obviously there's tools coming out in every facet of the creative world. Even for example, like photography, right? Like, I know that's a big area of contention for a lot of photographers, is that there's a lot of apps coming out, for example, that kind of automate the editing process.
I think the most popular app is Instagram when it comes to that, right?
Yeah.
The photo app.
And VSCO and...
Well, yeah. Then do you think that's watering down photography? Or is it that's creating more photographers? I mean, it's partly technology, right?
Yeah.
You know, everyone has a camera now, where before, not everyone had a camera. Now, literally, we all do. And we all have these filters that it used to take, like, you know, the right amount of exposure in a dark room, you know, to burn or, you know, do something to, you know, the film to make it look grainy or look a certain way. Now all I have to do is click a filter. How do you think it's affecting photographers, for example?
Oh, there's so many ways. One thing is that I know a lot of photographers are frustrated by this type of automation because there's like this joke, like everyone says everyone's a photographer now, you know, and it does water down the art of it in a way. I mean, it doesn't matter like how many effects you have if you don't know how to shoot at the end of the day. Like, you can't like edit that, you know, there's only so much you can do to a photo. So I don't think it's completely ruining photography, but it is kind of, it's become less of a craft in a lot of people's eyes, maybe not to photographers who do it for a living. But also a lot of photographers, because of this, are starting to go back to film because there is it, that's something that everyone can do.
And why are they going back to film?
Because it's more of like a...
Besides what you said, sorry to interrupt.
Well, film, first of all, it has character. It has like... And you have to be so careful when you're working with film. With digital, you can get your iPhone out and just snap a bunch of pictures. And of course, if you take 1,000 pictures, you'll find one that's decent. With film, you have to be so thoughtful and you have to be really skilled. And because you're limited with how many shots you have. And then you have to get them developed. And it's kind of a surprise as to what you're going to get. You know, and some people develop it themselves. So there's a whole other art process to that. And film basically is... They're kind of going back to their roots, and we're seeing this a lot too, even with like hand lettering and other stuff like that. People are going back to like the old kind of trade style way of doing things.
Well, this is, so basically, I think what you're getting at, and it's a way to kind of keep this at a universal creative level, because I know we tend to want to bring it into mostly the design world since we're both designers. Mm-hmm. But to, like I said, to kind of make it more of a creative level in general. Like in a universal way, I think creatives are now are looking for more unique, I hate to use this overused word, but authentic mm-hmm. ways to create value for their clients and even for themselves. A podcast that I listen to religiously called The Creative Pep Talk talks about, the host is Andy J. Miller, big fan of his. And he talks about, you know, you can also create value for yourself, you know. I'm kind of sidetracking a little bit, but my point is that we're looking for new ways to create value, you know, either for ourselves, like I just said, or for our clients, you know, because I think what you're trying to get at is that there's certain tools that are streamlining these, you know, these creative processes that are maybe starting to make things feel a little homogenous, especially, I guess, in our industry, but even in general, right? Because now there's a Instagram look, mm-hmm. and, you know, websites are really becoming more and more homogenous, and same thing with app design, right?
Yeah, and I think sometimes these tools are being used to replicate popular styles because they know they'll get that type of attention. People will appreciate them more if they are, like you're saying, kind of within that homogenous set of that appearance or aesthetic, depending on what industry you're in. But and it's very interesting how there's an automation going on to replicate popular styles. So you just see it everywhere. And that is definitely a downfall.
So how do creative professionals combat the wave of homogenous aesthetics?
Well, I think that there's a few ways you can do it. One way is to not let yourself be too influenced by popular styles. Like, it's good to see what's out there to get a reference point, but just dig deep. And I think we've mentioned this in previous episodes, just dig deep and stay true to your own passions and what you like to represent. If you're trying too hard,
I think everybody's trying to do that, though. Sorry to interrupt. I mean,
what if someone?
I know I am.
Well, yeah, but.
But most creatives are that way, right?
Sure, but there's also a big segment you're seeing where, if you go on Dribbble, everyone's stuff looks like the same three people did it because they're replicating a style. So they're not truly being. That doesn't seem like they're digging deep to me there.
I know we kind of talked about this in one of our podcasts before we had our long break, was that like getting overexposed to inspiration. So you're kind of talking about that a little bit, right?
Yeah. And so, like you can go on YouTube and look at a tutorial of like what program they used and what like settings they use, and you can just replicate it and just change a couple things, and you know it'll be popular because that style is trending and it's getting a lot of views. So I think we talk so much about social media because it is so ingrained in like, and it's changed the creative field in so many ways. So, but I'm going to bring it back real quick because that is kind of, I think it's kind of fueling the way people are using programs. You want to get those views, and maybe we're letting our egos get in the way a little too much, and we're losing our soul when it comes to our creative endeavors.
No, yeah, I recently wrote an article kind of about that, how, you know, I think a lot of artists, and I've fallen into this trap a little bit of, you know, like, oh, my last illustration didn't get this X amount of likes on Instagram or Dribbble, so I must suck. You know, so I think a lot of artists are feeling that more than I do, even. And I think as a result, yeah, people are creating work for other designers, other creatives, and they just want to do what's going to get them the likes, you know, which is, it's human instinct. So I don't blame anyone for that. And like I said, I do that myself. But, you know, I think to kind of, get back to the main track, I guess, is that I think one big way to combat, homogenous aesthetics with these tools is to create content, valuable content. One of my favorite designers out there and really kind of teachers, Chris Doe, he runs the school. I highly recommend it if you're a UX designer. He talks about the web being like a car, and the frame has kind of been homogenized for sure. Like, we need four wheels, we need a steering wheel, we need an engine. You know, so it's like, I think a lot of people think that's like, we have to be creative there, and we don't. But as a result, people think, oh, we can't be creative anymore. Well, you know, or there's a difference between a Ferrari and, you know, a crappy pickup truck, even though they're both like vehicles. So you can still, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that the Ferrari has better content. You know, there's leather seats, it has better electronics, it has better content than a Prius or a Toyota, right? So I think creating different, not necessarily, it doesn't have to always be different, but it has to be good. It has to be good content that maybe is a little bit true to your own voice, for sure.
I agree. And I think designing with purpose is something that is definitely going by the wayside in a lot of ways, but it doesn't mean that it's that creativity is doomed because of all of this automation and all that dribble depression and all this other stuff. It's just that I think sometimes when the bubble kind of starts to inflate, like there's going to be a point in which it bursts. And I think it's getting to that point where the bubble is going to burst that soon. And people have already started to demonstrate that they're going back to their roots with things. People are going back to like hand drawing and film and all this other stuff because it's more
organic. Talking mostly about the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're having the problem here, right? We're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my first design teacher really pushed like, nothing without a reason. What's the concept?
Exactly.
Right? You know, what's the reason for making something blue or adding thick strokes to a logo? What's the point? The reason? Have a reason.
Yeah. That's something that...
That's what's missing.
And
a lot of design.
And I think part of that thought process is being taken out because people are so eager to get it up on social media that they're not taking as much time to like really shoot around with ideas, just really kind of sit on them and explore things and let themselves be inspired because someone else is posting every single day or three times a day and they're not. And so they want to be competitive and get likes because maybe they'll get a job that way or whatever. Or maybe it's just for ego purposes or, you know, whatever reason. But I think that's another reason why people aren't sitting down and letting themselves be inspired. Truly, like, with their hearts and their soul, you know.
Right. So, what else? What's next?
Well, I mean, I think that, like I said, the bubble's gonna burst at some point because it just can't keep going on this way. I feel like whenever there's something new and exciting, it just like the internet happened, and there's been a lot of bubbles. You know, everybody gets in on it. Like there's so many programs coming out constantly or, you know, ways to automate things. But at the end of the day, like when people are getting hired to do work, clients aren't going to eventually start to notice that they don't want to look like their competitors. Right.
What's the difference between us and Squarespace?
Yeah. So, right. And so you're going on Squarespace and there's a limited amount of things you can do with Squarespace, although you can customize what's in those modules.
Well, that's my point. Like, yeah. I actually don't dislike Squarespace because I think they make beautiful buckets.
Yeah, they kind of
make beautiful
it.
Frames.
Yeah.
And it's up to you, the user, if you're not using a designer, to fill it with, you know, quality content, right? And you could do that yourself without a designer or a photographer or an illustrator, but you know, I'm biased. I would highly recommend getting one of those to make the content for you, you know. But if I want to get away from aesthetic because, my friend Nate, we had him on the show, again, pre-hiatus. and he wrote a great article talking about, you know, designers and creatives kind of, you know, design themselves out of work because of these templates and filters and whatever it is. And, you know, I guess, you know, what he kind of I liked what he was talking about, and it made me think, I think content's one way to create value, to make yourself valuable as a creative, is to create the content. But most important, but even more importantly, is like you could offer strategy and experience and consulting. I think that's maybe more valuable than the actual aesthetic visual product because everyone can pretty much make whatever they want these days. I mean, there's grade schoolers that know the software now and know how to use Photoshop. But, you know, when we go to school or when we self-teach ourselves and we get clients, whatever, you know, there's experience, there's a level of education and knowledge that kind of comes with that, that maybe not everyone has. And even if they do, they might have a different point of view than you. So I think it's important as a creative to go ahead and let your own point of view and your voice come through in your work, even if it's client work and it's more design based or photography based.
Great set of points there. The consulting thing is really something to think about, because the client side of this is affected as well, right? Because clients are becoming aware, like, there's always a stereotype of, like,
why should they use us instead of Squarespace?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah, right.
And it's a hard question.
And they're becoming
to
more aware Sorry of these tools. No, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're becoming aware that we can use Squarespace or get a nice WordPress template. They're becoming aware that there's more programs out there for designing and automating. So, like Zach said, being creative with your thoughts, like, when you're consulting, you're dynamic, you're customizing what you're advising to that particular client or customer. So that is really important, and like, that forces you to really, first of all, exercise your person-to-person connections, which can give you a lot of great ideas. If you're just, like, you know, not really asking good questions to your client, and you're just sitting here like, well, I'll make you something that's popular, like, you're not really assessing the needs. And so by being a good consultant, you can really up your skill no matter what industry you're in, for sure.
Well, if I could use a bucket metaphor again, at Active Color, you know, the studio I'm working at, you know, we're transitioning to, you know, not focusing so much on building the bucket, but how to fill the bucket and what to fill the bucket with. You know, so the bucket is, you know, the website where we can do that. I mean, we have a great development team, we have good designers. We know how to build the bucket, but, like, how are you going to fill it? And how, you know, what should you put in it? And how do you sell that to, you know, whoever, you know? And so, in other words, we're saying, we're asking ourselves, you know, we're experienced, we've been doing this for a while. How do we create value now for our customers that could easily do this, you know, do a really nice looking website in Squarespace? And my answer is like, I have no problem telling a client if it works for them to use Squarespace. I think it's fine. But then I still say to them, you should still hire us, because I'll tell you what to put on that template and where you should put things on that template. And we can even create, you know, the photography or the illustration or the motion graphic, you know, to put in that stuff. I tell, you know, my boss that when I was in school, I was fairly intentional what I wanted to get good at. When I was at school, I was like, I really want to get good at motion and illustration and, like, UX, UI, because those are things that are going to fill the bucket, you know? So I was assuming that those things would, you know, have some value, and I'm still going to get better at all those things, but that's kind of, you know, what I wanted to focus on, you know? So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things you said, just really, they're definitely great points, you know? Yeah, just going back to, like, using a metaphor, like, it doesn't matter what kind of equipment you have. Like, let's say you're a photographer, you have the best, or you want to be a photographer, you have the best equipment, you have automation with your filters and stuff, but it doesn't mean your content's going to come out good. Like, it doesn't mean you know how to shoot those angles. It doesn't mean, well, you know how to capture things.
Well, yeah, just to keep building on what I've been saying, it's a good photographer is not his camera, it's his eye.
Absolutely.
Or her, right? It's not, the camera is not picking the subject.
Yeah.
And the content, right? The camera's executing your vision, for sure. And so I think it's important to, you know, for a digital creative and designer, illustrator, whatever, to know the software or to know how to draw. I mean, that's the execution part. It's your mind and your voice and the way you could communicate concepts for your client or for yourself. That's the value you create for yourself and for others.
Yes. Tools don't make your skill. Tools don't make you talented. So just being true to what you have experienced, the wisdom you've accumulated through your practice, through dealing with people, that gives you your unique perspective, and clients and the people around you will pick up on that. And that's really important. So, you know, it's important. Stay up to date with the tools. You know, they can definitely help you execute your vision much better, much faster. but don't let the tool define you.
Right. So to sidetrack a little bit, what can some creative people that are listening, what can they do to kind of steer clear of the social media / filters tool or traps, I should say? Like, what can creatives do today, in other words, to create unique value, you know, and have their own voice? Because it's really hard to these days.
Yeah, first of all, don't let the pressure of social media collapse your creativity. Like, don't let that pressure of having to get stuff out like many times a day or every single day. Maybe take a couple days to build that thing that you want to put on social media. Like, give it more time and it'll be worth it, because what you're gonna be putting out is gonna catch people's eyes much more.
Well, or if you're doing a daily challenge, because Maria and I argue about this every once in a while, it's okay to do a daily challenge. There's projects that take time. I'm not arguing that you shouldn't, that everything you do should be like a couple hours. That's silly. Of course, you know, there's going to be projects that take a long time. So if you're a designer, it could be months, could be years. And, you know, illustrator could be weeks, could be days. But if you're doing a daily challenge, and I think I'm a proponent that you should, mm-hmm. you know, find, you know, because you make something every day. That's really my attitude, right? Go ahead and post it on Dribbble or Instagram or Behance, but don't, you know, burn your portfolio and throw away your art supplies and sell your computer if you only get like 8 likes on Dribbble or Instagram or something like that. Yeah. Like, or don't automatically think like, oh, I better change my style because no one, you know, clicked the heart button, you know, on my social media. You know, so I think that's what creates the homogenous, you know, aesthetics.
It's like a fear, this fear that's rampant.
I have to create something that will get me noticed on social media. Yeah. It's really easy. I mean, I've done it with my own work. Like, I'm trying to break away and make weirder things, to be honest. But I went through a phase of like, oh, I know if I make an icon or a still life piece, I know I'm going to get a bunch of likes. So I'm going to do that.
It's kind of funny how
I definitely went through that phase.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I think a lot of people do go through it because your brain kind of creates an algorithm and it's really hard to ignore it sometimes. Like you just, but it's just so easy. All I have to do is combine this, and this. And you find like formulas for what gets a lot of likes. Like, you can easily just browse and start to pick up like what will truly get you likes. But what does that mean at the end of the day? You want to get likes.
First of all, to your clients, sorry to interrupt again. To your clients, it means jack, to be honest. Like, how many likes you have on social media.
It's not speaking to them. What does it matter? You
know, like, again, I wrote an article about this literally, like, a few days ago. Like, something might look phenomenal on Behance or Dribbble or Instagram, but you know, the actual people that want to pay you for this might not like it, even though it has, like, 1,000 likes on Dribbble, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, first of all, don't design for designers. Don't shoot photography for other photographers. You know, you want to hope that your work is, you know, appealing to non-creative people. And when I make work that resonates with, I guess, quote unquote, the average person, that's not like a designer, photographer, illustrator, that makes me happy. So like, okay, like, this is speaking to them in some way. Of course, I can make like a cool looking icon or a logo or something that might resonate with a creative. But if it doesn't make sense to the person that potentially is buying the logo, or the logo is convincing them to buy the brand or the product, then I'm failing, you know? So that's something I struggle with a lot, for sure.
Yeah, but a lot of people do, you know? It's hard. It's really hard to resist the urge nowadays. And now I think the other struggle is that because creativity has become more popularized, there, you feel like you're competing against a lot, like sheer mass of creatives out there, and there's a lot of work, and you don't want to get lost in the work, but you'll get likes, but you will also get lost if you homogenize your work to match.
Well, to respond to that, here's a secret. There's a lot, and I mean a lot, of talented, very talented creatives out there, which is awesome. And, you know, it's okay, but just know that's like you're competing with those people. But what makes this industry cool is that we're not really competing. We're all like in it with each other. Like, this is a kind of an industry where like once you're in almost, and we all know each other kind of thing, which is cool, but it, especially with social media, the downside is that, again, we tend to design for ourselves. Like, oh, I hope this illustrator likes what I draw, you know, or what I made today. You know, like, you can't think that way. You kind of have to get away from the creative world a little bit. Like, if you're listening to this, like, don't go on Pinterest for a week and see what happens. Or Instagram. Or Dribbble. Like, take a week off, you know, and go outside and see what inspires you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm starting to do that a little bit, and I can already see it affecting my work. Just a little bit.
You call it playing. Taking time to play.
Yeah, just taking time to make weird things. Like, I was telling Maria some of the stuff that I'm really excited to draw in the next couple of days is just like really undribble-ish.
That's great,
you
though.
Know? So
it reflects you so much more. Like, you really get a taste of who you are as a designer, creative, whatever.
Well, I think that's, you know, like, shoot what you want to shoot, draw what you want to draw, design what you want to design, especially if it's for free or for yourself, you know, and then hopefully, you know, you end up making enough work and it does get seen by the social media that we've just trashed for like 15 minutes.
Oops.
But it gets to the point where maybe, you know, people see what you do and they want to hire you to do that thing you like to do for free anyway. That's the goal, right?
Yeah.
It's I hope so.
It's okay to, you want people to see your weird or quirky or, you know, unique view of the world, because we're all unique beings. And a whole point of creativity is to express yourself, and that's getting lost. So just remember that you're going to do yourself a service, and you're also going to do the industry a service in all the creative fields if you are being true to yourself as a creative. And that's going to help everyone, and that's going to create value everywhere.
Well, besides getting away from social media and making more honest work, what else can creatives do to really differentiate themselves from Instagram and Squarespace and other things like that?
Well, I mean, the good thing about being a creative is that you find opportunities in the world around you that other people might miss. So it's okay. Maybe do go to a museum and get inspired by other people's work, but make it your own. Like, find ways to make it your own. Like, don't just, like, you know, okay, like, so-and-so is going to disappear for like a month. We don't know where they went. Be engaged in your surroundings, but now take those inspirations, even if they're from other artists, and take time to figure out how they fit in your world. And I know you had to kind of go through that.
Yeah, of course, for sure. And well, a guy that I'm inspired by, not so much like aesthetically, but when it comes to kind of discovering your aesthetic voice, again, is Andy J. Miller, who does the Creative Pep Talk podcast. I mean, thank you for listening to our podcast, but also listen to his. It's really inspirational. But to get back to what he was saying, like, create like an inspiration tree. In other words, like, sure, there's probably some illustrators, designers, photographers, musicians that inspire you today. And I think that's great. But who are they inspired by? Mm-hmm. You know? And then find those people and find out who they were inspired by. And I know for me, like, a lot of my favorite illustrators were inspired by, you know, Mary Blair and Jim Flora and like the, you know, 50s and 60s illustrators. And I got into that. Then I realized, oh, they were really into Paul Klee and Pablo Picasso. And like, so for me, I was starting to throw things, all of these things into a blender. Okay, I really love mid-century art. I really love, you know, abstract expressionism and kind of cubism. And I obviously like some of the aesthetics of modern-day illustrators, you know, flat digital illustration. So how can I throw that into blender? So because I had this inspiration tree, quote-unquote, I was able to start kind of building, I feel, and I still got a ways to go, I think, but I was starting to build my own aesthetic. And starting to differentiate itself a little bit from maybe some other illustrators are doing, you know. So I would recommend doing that for sure.
Yeah, I will say that's a very beautiful moment in your creative career, where these all came together, and it came together really awesomely. I'll say so. At least that's my opinion on you.
Oh well,
maybe I'm a little biased. I mean, I don't know, but
yeah, no, she's super biased.
Just a little
actually.
Bit, though. But no, I mean, that is so. This last point is like, just make sure you do stay inspired and even by other people, but just make it your own at the end of the day. And I think an example of someone I really enjoy following is Tiffany Pratt, and she kind of exemplifies doing her thing, you know, like maybe not everyone is a fan of her work. Maybe some people think it's really out there weird or like, you know, it's definitely fruity out there, or whatever.
But who cares?
But you know what? She's on TV. She's making appearances. And she doesn't really like let something be beneath her, you know, like she goes in and will do things that people will be like, why do you think tiling someone's house is fun? But she loves it. And then she'll give their kitchen a makeover, or she'll design some promotions for people or whatever. And like, she just does it, and she's being true to herself, and she just lets that come through in her work.
It goes back to like that really overused word, ironically, which is authenticity. You know, like, it's like everyone's handcrafting authentic, like it's authentic, handcrafted, rustic antlers.
Yeah.
With triangles.
On craft beer.
You know, so, but I'm making fun of this whole idea of authenticity, but like the reason why it's so hard right now is because people crave that. And I think people do crave that because of the economy went to crap in 2008. But more importantly, people are seeing that, everything's getting more homogenous and, you know, automated. So I think people do crave a voice that's a little more authentic, and I think that's what Tiffany Pratt is doing.
Yeah. And so kind of the moral of the story here is just...
There's a moral to the story.
The moral.
Cool.
Yeah.
We like doing that, I guess.
Yeah.
That's good.
Throwing it in there.
I like it.
Just quickly, you know.
Here's the moral, kids.
All right. Sit in a circle. Let's talk about it. So basically what we're trying to say is that the creative field is a really weird world to be in right now due to all these programs and expectations and social media. However, it doesn't mean you can't stand out. It doesn't mean you can't be successful with your own vision. It doesn't mean you should be afraid to do something a little different because it's not getting a lot of likes. So just be a creative. That's why you're in these fields to begin with. Enjoy it.
Well, yeah. I mean, to piggyback and even counter that a little bit, not entirely, but yeah. I agree with you. But at the same time, it's okay at first. If I say you're just starting to get into whatever craft you want to get into, it's okay to be inspired. We're not saying that. And it's okay to maybe like over emulate it first, because you're learning. I mean, you might be learning the software, you might be learning the tool, if it's a camera or a guitar. Like some of the best bands ever start off as cover bands, for example. Yeah. Like it's okay. But like I said, start building an inspiration tree, get off of social media. Slowly but surely, if you keep making work, you'll be able to start finding your voice. And I know this is going to sidetrack it from the main topic, but if you start finding your voice and finding a value, then you're creating value that, you know, the technology and the tools and the homogenous aesthetics can't really compete with.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're doing all the things that Zach is talking about, you're building that confidence. And the confidence is the most magical tool that gives you the opportunity to truly be okay with expressing what you want to express.
Right.
So that's kind of, doesn't matter how many digital tools you have, if you don't have the tool of confidence, everything is going to be a lot harder to achieve. And you're going to fade into the background with all of the thick stroked outline dribble shots that are out there now.
But what's wrong with thick strokes?
I like thick strokes. Okay. This could be a whole other podcast. I'm just kidding. But no, I don't think there's anything wrong with strokes. I'm just saying when you go on Dribbble, there's like, if you were to like make a stereotype of like what you see on your Dribbble feed.
Basically Maria is saying my work is a big stereotype. No, I'm just kidding. I know what you mean. we already spoke about it sooner. Like Dribbble, it's easy to fall into a homogenous booby trap with Dribbble for sure. And I love Dribbble. I feel like I'm knocking Dribbble, but I enjoy it because I kind of use it as a little online visual journal that does hopefully get me some fans. you know?
Yes.
So it's cool as long as you're doing your own thing and that,
and don't get pressured. Don't like, cause Zach and I have both like experienced that, like, I'm going to call it like a bit of dribble depression where like, you were like so excited about something and you posted it and then people were like,
this was the coolest illustration ever. Yeah. I love it. And then I posted it and it has like eight likes and like 30 views. I'm like, oh God, I suck.
I should just stop.
Yeah.
Don't let it happen to you. It might, but don't let it stop you. Like, you're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. And it doesn't mean that it's not a great piece. It just depends on who saw it that day. It just depends on the audience. And like Dribble, like Zach always says, is a community of designers who have a design eye. So you that may do, like, for example, Instagram is compared to Dribble. Sometimes our work does way better on Instagram than it does Dribble.
That's true.
And like, what I like to do is hashtag industries that I've designed the logo for. And I like to see their feedback. Like, so I did a logo for like, to play around, I did like a logo for like a menswear brand. I hashtagged menswear companies and actually they liked it. So I was like, oh, cool. I know this is working because this industry is liking it. And that to me is more important at the end of the day.
Well, I know we kind of sidetracked. This became like partly a social media podcast. It's okay.
We're always on like the social media thing every time. I'm sorry, guys. Like, but it is a huge part of what we do, and it really has changed the game.
I think it was relevant for this podcast because I think social media has helped kind of influence the tools that are being made to devalue what designers and creatives are doing. So I promise, well, I don't want to speak for Maria, but I promise next episode I will not talk about social media.
Oof, this is going to be hard, but okay, let's make an agreement.
Let's make a pact right now.
We're not going to talk about social media.
Okay.
It's going to be really hard, but we're going to try. Unless you like us talking about social media, then we can just go all day.
No, it's not.
Okay, I'll tone it down. All right.
Okay.
But yeah, so hopefully, you know, this helped you guys a little bit in some way. We're still going through the process ourselves. We always like to mention that we are not gurus. We don't have it figured out. Yeah, we're noobs. We're just floating around out there trying to find our way like everyone else. But we like to share our journey with you and our perspective and hopefully, you know, it helps you in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to the next podcast. Hope you guys all have a great week doing all your awesome creative stuff.
Make weird things.
Make it.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, and we'll be talking to you guys again soon.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.